Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins. It's great to have your company as we discuss the Camino de Santiago or the Way of St. James. Just before we get to this week's interview, I'll be in the United States in the second week in March 2020 to attend the American Pilgrims on the Camino gathering in Lake Tahoe. At the conference, I'll be speaking about our place in the global Camino family, and I'll also be performing a concert on the Saturday night. Now, I'm not sure if there are still spots available for the gathering, but you could Google it. But I'll also be doing some shows in the United States along the way. San Diego, San Jose, Seattle, Chicago. If you're interested in attending any of those shows, just shoot me an email, danmullinsmusic@gmail.com. I'll send you the details. danmullinsmusic@gmail.com. I'm really excited about visiting the US to sing and talk about one of my life's great loves, the Camino. I receive so many emails and messages via social media about the Camino and the impact it's had on people's lives. So if you're new to the podcast, we talk each week about the Camino de Santiago or the Way of St. James, a series of pilgrimages across Europe. Pilgrims walk and choose to live very simply for the duration of their Camino. You take only a small pack on your back, maybe one change of clothes, a few toiletries, maybe a small mini pack. But the idea is to find space and time and to reflect, to meet other pilgrims, to share their stories and their vision, their lives, even if only for a short time. The walk can be a wonderful source of inspiration. For me, it was songs, stories, and an opportunity to reaffirm my love of music. And I was delighted to sing for people on the Camino. And on my return, I found a new energy for what I now realize is my life purpose. I read a quote this week and I thought I'd share it with you. It's attributed to Craig Crippen. I couldn't find much about him, to be honest. But I like where he's coming from. You are being presented with a choice, evolve or remain. If you choose to remain unchanged, you'll be presented with the same challenges, the same routine, the same storms, the same situations, until you learn from them, until you love yourself enough to say no more, until you choose change. If you choose to evolve, you'll connect with the strength within you. You'll explore what lies outside the comfort zone. You will awaken to love. You will become. You will be. You have everything you need. Choose to evolve. Choose love. One of my correspondents wrote to me a while back to say he'd walked the Camino with an old friend. He expected it to be a nice walk, a chance to catch up, to enjoy the slow tourism of the Camino. But what he found was much, much more. His name is Leo Jan, and he's on the line from Melbourne. Welcome, pilgrim.
Hi, Dan, how are you?
I'm very well. Listen, I don't know a lot about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born and raised in Venezuela, South America, and due to the harsh political situation back in 2006, I decided to migrate, and I landed here in Australia and in Melbourne, more specifically. And since then, I've been living here. I have a wife, two kids, they were all born in Venezuela as well. So, but they all did very well in adapting to this society and this culture. We've been happy ever since. So we've been living here since 2007. I'm a civil engineer by trade. I work in the construction industry, and I'm also a writer. And So, a bit of an atypical story, just coming from Venezuela, now Australian.
Yeah, you said to me in one of your emails, I'm a civil engineer who works as a project manager for a Melbourne-based construction company, but when I'm not yelling at subcontractors or fighting with architects, I like to write fiction.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
So is writing a form of escape for you?
Absolutely, because the world I live in, it's the most materialistic and capitalist world that you can find. I mean, it's all about money, about production, and then it's a lot of tension with subcontractors, with clients about money. justifying your projects in front of your directors. But then when I start writing, it's like a whole new world. And I have a writing group. We meet every other Saturday near where I live in Sandringham. It's called like an advanced skill, advanced writing workshop. And we read each other's stories and we share and we workshop each other's stories and we make recommendations. And we've been going, I've been doing that since 2013. And it's really enjoyable. And it's like a world that's totally separate to what I do on a day-to-day basis.
So do you write often? I mean, you're obviously working every day or a working week in your role as a construction and civil engineer. Do you then go home every night or every couple of nights? Like, do you write often?
Yeah, let's say I write two or three nights a week, depending on the because in this workshop we have like deadlines. So I'm pressed to write. Well, I put pressure on myself. I could very well do the workshop on the Saturday and not present anything, but I usually do. So this Saturday, for example, I need to present something, so I need to start writing tonight and have something ready by Saturday. So I write as frequently as I can, yes.
Where did the skill come from?
I don't have a clue. I started reading when I was very young, and I read a lot in my teens. And then at some point I decided to, well, I think I can do this. And I started writing. The first real story was like 20 years ago. We made a trip to New York, a group of friends from high school, with their wives. So I think we were seven of us. We made a trip and I decided to write a story about the seven people in that group. And I wrote a short story and I gave it to them, where we were about to board the plane. And they absolutely loved it. Everyone was surprised to read that and to see that we're part of a story. And, I changed everyone's names, but they were really delighted. I thought, well, I think it's working, and they continue to write since then. I wrote firstly in Spanish. I have a few things published in Spanish online, and I even wrote a novel in Spanish back in Venezuela. And then in 2013, a few years after I arrived in Melbourne, I started writing in English. And then I write exclusively in English from then onwards.
Where do the stories come from?
Usually, like my teacher says, you write about what you know. So they come from life experiences. So I wrote a novel in English, which I finished a couple of years ago, and it's not published because I still need to polish it and I don't have the time to do that. So it's a character that's very similar to myself, and it's all these life experiences growing up, like a coming of age story. And so I include some of my experiences with girls, with friends, with sports, in university, all that type of stuff. And then it becomes easy to. Then I started writing, and I discovered I remember people I hadn't thought of for years, and then they became part of the story as well. So obviously the character has another name, not Leo, and personal life is different than mine. I wanted to make it as different as possible to mine, just to so people don't keep saying, "Ah, this is you." But obviously, his experiences are pretty similar to things that I lived in the past. There,
you know, some writers start with the conclusion. What's your methodology? How do you write?
So I think I'm the opposite. This story about the Camino. It's called When Camino. I arrived from the Camino and I knew I was going to be able to write something, but I didn't have anything in mind. Then I sat down and I had an image of a dog, of a stray dog at the gate of the hostel. And because I saw many dogs at the Camino, which I thought it would be very cool to do the walk with a dog. So the dog obviously didn't exist in my real journey. Then I had this image of a dog and then I started writing about it. And then the whole thing starts to write itself. That's what I usually say. I start with a simple image or a paragraph or a phrase that I like that came to mind. And then the whole thing evolves. I think the story pretty much writes itself from there.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about your short story, Buen Camino, in a moment. But I just want you to cast your mind back. Tell us how you first learned about the Camino.
Okay. You know that Venezuela was a Spanish colony for 300 years.
Yeah.
And then back in the early 19th century, we managed our independence. But still, the country is filled with people from Spanish descent. And then the Spaniards kept coming to Venezuela, especially after during the Civil War in Spain in the 30s and then in the 60s. And a lot of people from Galicia. There's a lot of people from Galicia. My sister is married to the son of a Spanish immigrant from Galicia. So there's very close ties with Spain. And one of the things that struck me when I was in Galicia is that I walk into these small restaurants, small eateries, or tascas, and then it felt like walking into a place in the Caracas that I grew in. Yeah. It was amazing how much of the same smells, the tastes, and the people. So we are, the Venezuelan ties with Spain are huge. So we always knew about the Camino. My dad kept telling me about the Camino, and he told me, it's an 800-kilometer walk. I said, well, people have to be nuts to do that. I never thought. And then I would have liked to do it. I would have liked to do the whole thing, but for work and time, I couldn't do more than the last 115 days. But yeah, I've known about the Camino since I was in my 20s, I think.
Cast your mind back then to pre your Camino. Do you remember what your expectations were?
To be honest, my expectations were very mundane, were very simple. I just wanted to have a beer in a beautiful part of Spain with my best friend and his wife, who's a close friend as well. And I knew the food was going to be great and the landscape was going to be fantastic. That's all I was thinking. I was thinking, I have my friend from Canada, Juan Carlos, who I grew up with.
Yeah.
I mean, we know each other since 1970, so we're celebrating 50 years of friendship this year. And we have made a pact, because he lives in Canada. We made a pact to see each other every couple of years. So this was an excuse to see to see each other in the Camino. And that's all I was expecting, no more than that.
So what did you discover?
Well, I discovered many things, and I think I started riding. I mean, I enjoyed the Camino. And from when we arrived to Santiago, spent a few days there. And then we headed off to Portugal with my friends, and then another friend from high school joined us. So it was a really nice trip. But I didn't think too much about it. Only the fact that I enjoyed it. But when I started riding, I realized how much it had meant to me. I mean, I discovered many things about relationships. And that's what my story is about. I discovered that, well, the Camino is a perfect example of life itself. It's like the Camino is like a reduced version of life itself. You have your ups and downs. You have your friends that appear and disappear. You have your constant friends and your constant relationships. And that's what I discovered. And I discovered that as the Camino is not defined by how harsh is a steep climb or a steep descent. It's defined by the whole Camino itself. So that's the same thing I realized about relationships. My, for example, my wife, I've been with her for many, many, many years. And we had our fights and we had our good times and bad times. But in the end, it's just the constant that she's always there. We have the same goals. We have the same aspirations. And that's what we've been together for so long. So, and same with my relationship with my friend, with Juan Carlos. I mean, we've had our ups and downs. We've been apart and we've been back together, as you know, we've been talking to each other for a long time. And then sometimes we don't, but it's always there. Our relationship is a long journey. It's not a sprint, not a race that you have to win. It's just a long journey and you have to take it, you know, not the relationship as well as the Camino. It's not defined by the ups or the downs.
Yeah.
That's something I realized.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to get to talking about Juan Carlos and your relationship, indeed your relationship with your wife. But you said to me in an email, it was a journey of reflection and self-discovery.
Yes.
Did you ever have a feeling before you walked the Camino that there was something that needed to be discovered?
Not at all. It just happened. I just wasn't, like I told you, I wasn't expecting I've heard about the self-discovery thing, but I'm a bit skeptic about, you know.
Oh yeah, skeptic.
Skeptic. So I said, well, I wasn't thinking any of that. I thought, well, my wife is my wife, my friend is my friend, we're always going to be together. But I didn't think about all these things. And to be honest, also in the Camino, even the day before it started, I got I have an old injury in one of my ankles. Mm. That was a squash injury from 20 years ago. And now, while I was walking and practicing for the Camino, it started to flare up again. But when we got there, the day before we started, it really hurt. So it hurt to a point that I had to sit down for 45 minutes before I kept walking. And it happened every day during the Camino. It happened to me at some point. And I had to tell the guys, just continue on. I'll catch up with you later. Don't worry about me. And I realized at the end, I didn't care about that too much. It was real painful. It was a real, you know, some point I felt like very, you know, why does it have to happen? And then you realize it didn't matter. It didn't matter at all. We got to the end anyway. Every once in a while, even when I stayed behind, they were waiting for me at the next stop with a cold beer and a bunch of people having a nice chat, and it all went away. So the injury was not important at all. And I realized how many good things I have in my life, and I really appreciate them now.
Yeah, that's right. And do you remember the moment on the Camino when you thought, oh, okay, something very special is happening here?
The exact moment, I think it was, we reached a point. I was really slow because my ankle was hurting. And then we reached the bottom of a hill. You could see the steep climb ahead of me. And I decided to walk fast because during the climbs, it didn't hurt. I just could do whatever the hell I want. So I really got ahead of everyone. I walked and walked and walked and walked and then left everyone behind and kept walking. And then I was walking really fast and got to the top and continued walking. And I met a couple of Irish women. I was struck a conversation, and I felt, this is special. Not only I can walk, I can leave everyone behind. And then I'm not the most social person in the world. And I struck a conversation with two completely unknown women and who you know how it is in the Camino. You meet them from time to time in other stops the next day, and you know, and I realized this is something really special. It doesn't matter that my ankle hurts. At some point it's not gonna hurt. At some point I'm enjoying the ride. And at every stop, when it was really hot, we stopped at one of these places in the middle of nowhere, and there was always a cold beer in hand, which I really enjoyed. And I caught up with everyone else. Sometimes, like I said, I was the one arriving later, and sometimes I was the one arriving first. And it was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, and when you arrived home, you wrote this short story that you talked about before called Buen Camino, loosely based on the four of you who walked together.
Yes,
you and Juan Carlos and your wives and your relationships, and you talk about Marta, ever enthusiastic and energetic, who you say was the opposite of you.
Right?
Now let's face it, she was enthusiastic and energetic. You weren't really like that. And you had the pain, and I think you wrote about a pain in your knee in the book, in the short story, but it was your ankle in real life. But you write so beautifully, you say, we were playing the Russian roulette of hostels. So we never knew when the gun would go off.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was an adventure,
It was an adventure. And you, let me ask you, did you enjoy the process of writing, but did you write each day on the Camino, or were you just sort of taking it all in, letting it ferment until you went home?
No. I didn't write anything during the Camino. I didn't write anything. I wasn't even thinking. I knew I was going to write something on my way back, but I didn't write at the Camino. And to be honest, I knew I had to write something, but I wasn't sure how to start or how to write or what to write about. And then I made it simple when I got back. And I started gathering memories from what we've done, and I started changing names and started changing, exaggerating the characters, because, of course, I mean, the four of us are picturing that story, but there are exaggerated characters and exaggerated, you know, problems in the relationships, because I had to do that for, you know, for dramatic reasons. But most of what happened is there. Most of what happened is there. But I didn't think about that when I was walking the Camino. I wasn't thinking about how am I going to write it. I knew it was going to come at some point, as it usually happens. And it was. I mean, when I sat down to write, as soon as I got back, a few days after I got back, I really I think it's like 7,000 words there that I wrote in a matter of a week.
Right.
I mean, it all came back to me.
Wow.
It all came to me very quickly and very thick. Actually, my tutor, my writing tutor, Claire, said to me that they had the makings of a novel, but no, I'm not going to write another novel for the time being. It's too much work. So I decided to make it short. And short as in 7,000 words, which is not really like a short story. It's a bit of a weird type of length for a story.
You write in the story that for your partners, Marta and Linda, it was a religious journey. But for you and Juan Carlos, a chance to eat and drink beer together and to catch up.
Yeah.
Tell us what your partners experienced on the Camino.
Yeah, their wives, actually. I just made them partners so that they...
Yeah, sure.
To make it a bit different, same as the pain in my knee and my ankle.
Yeah.
Yes, Maria Elena, who's Juan Carlos' wife, she's very religious. They actually did... They went to the Holy Land last year. And but she's very religious. And she knew the story. It was a pleasure. Well, she's always a pleasure to be around. But she was always telling us the story of St. James and how... They were his remains were found, and the whole story about the Camino. And my wife is also very religious, more than I am. And so they my wife was also looking forward to, you know, getting to Santiago and embracing the saint and all of that. I was a bit more skeptic than the others, and but I'm still a religious man. I am. If you ask me if I'm spiritual or religious, I'm more religious, I think.
Sure.
I still, you know, I'm a Catholic, practicing Catholic. I may have my differences with the church sometimes. I don't believe everything the church preaches. But, I'm a believer. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus Christ. And, yeah, I go to church with my wife every Sunday. So, yeah, always my wife's a bit more involved than I am. But at the end, yes, I am as well. But, like I said, I wasn't thinking of the religious part of it when I decided I wanted to go to the Camino. I just said to Juan Carlos, "Can we meet us in Galicia?" And he said, "Yeah, that's fine. Let's go for it." And that was it.
And yet your wives, they must have had a much different experience because they have that religious sensitivity.
Yes, they do. They do, especially Marilena. She's. I mean, it was a really when we got to Santiago. It's inevitable. We all hugged each other and we cried, and because it's just the emotion of just finishing the journey and finishing in one piece and having enjoyed it. And it was really emotional we got there. But obviously, I would have thought, I haven't spoken directly with her about this, but she was, I mean, I presume that out of the four of us, she was the more emotional about the arrival and about getting to Santiago and visiting the saint and all that.
You know, sports fans around the world will identify with this story. You're walking along the Camino and a woman wearing a Collingwood scarf walks straight past you. Now, if you're an English Premier League fan, that's like somebody walking past in a Liverpool jumper, or if you're an NFL fan, someone in a Patriots scarf. You don't expect to see that slice of home on the Camino, do you?
No, and I did see it. I mean, the Collingwood scarf was true.
Yeah.
I mean, I did see a Collingwood scarf. There was like a little like a monument in the middle of the woods with a virgin and a few, you know, people with photographs, and there was a Collingwood scarf, and I couldn't believe that. I can't believe there was a Collingwood scarf in the middle of Galicia around a virgin. But there it was. So, And I don't know. I mean, obviously Australians would understand that. I don't know if people from all over the world would think, well, this is a sports club, obviously.
Yeah. But it's the same if you're an English Premier League fan. You'd see a Liverpool scarf or a Patriots scarf or a Green Bay Packers scarf if you're an NFL fan.
Yeah, so also a New York Yankees.
Hat.
I saw somewhere that well.
You say in the story you weren't interested in collecting stamps. In your credential, you had as much interest in the reproductive cycle of iguanas. Why?
Yeah, I wasn't.
Why?
I don't know. I just didn't think it was that important. I mean, but as my wife was all over it when we got to some places where they were stamped. They just ran and they took their passports and everyone's passport. And they got the stamps and they listen. I don't think I even saw the the Camino, the passport, until we got to the end, and we went to the to get the Compostela. So I wasn't really looking for. I wasn't that interested in that.
You make what in the short story, you make mention of the views, the wonderful views, and I remember an Irish pilgrim saying to me one day, "Dan, slow down. Look at the view." And she said, "Dan, remember to stop from time to time to look back to see how far you've come." It's important advice, isn't it?
It is, because you're only thinking about, you know, especially when you're starting to ache and you're very tired, you just wanna get to the hostel, take a shower, and have something to eat. But yeah, you need to stop and look back. And I had to do a lot of that because of my injury. I had to stop sometimes for a period of 45 minutes or an hour. And I took the chance to sit in a place where I saw people walking past, and I saw the locals, and tried to look for a place where I had a view if it wasn't on a hill or something. So yeah, I had the chance to do it. But yeah, sometimes all you're just thinking of let's get to the destination. And lucky for us, we started really early sometimes, and so we go to the next town, you know, early afternoon, middle afternoon, so we had a chance to, you know, enjoy the town. Sometimes we went to the hostel, took a shower, and then went back out to have dinner. The views were fantastic. Sometimes you were walking in an open area, sometimes in the deep woods, sometimes you're crossing rivers. I saw some fantastic things that I didn't put in the story because I couldn't make sense of how to write them. I saw some people doing some sort of chanting, like a medieval chanting in the middle of the woods, and they were playing the Spanish, what do you call it? The Spanish pipes, similar to the Scottish pipes.
Yeah, that's right, the bagpipes.
It was an amazing sight. People were dressed like medieval times. There was like 20 of them. Looked like a cult, and I was amazed looking at that. And then I wrote, but I took it out of the story, that I felt like in the middle of a Game of Thrones episode. So I was going to be doing a bit of a Game of Thrones scene in there, but I said, no, it's too much. Let me take it out. So there's a few hundred words that I took out of the story. But yeah, that was amazing. I didn't know what they were doing or why. And so anyway, obviously they were together. Looked like some sort of a cult. But anyway, it was nice to look at.
And what a lovely surprise.
Lovely surprise. Middle of the woods.
Yeah. Let me read a paragraph from your story, and then I can ask you a question about it. Here we go. You say, "I thought about the Camino. The journey was a condensed version of life itself. There were ups and downs, which affected you in different ways. Friends who appear from nowhere and vanish without warning. Unwanted surprises at the turn of the corner. Relationships that fade away. But regardless of the good or bad times, the nasty surprises or health scares, once you reach your destination, you realize the one constant throughout the journey had been the loyalty of a true friend. As the four of you walked together, you felt like you were the characters of The Wizard of Oz. But let me ask you this, Leo, maybe you were all looking for the same thing, and that is to find what you were looking for."
Yes.
And did you find it?
I think so. Like I said, I didn't go to the Camino thinking I was going to look for something, but then I realized that I found what I was looking for. Reassurance of my friendship, reassurance of my relationship with my wife, reassurance that my life has been by all means wonderful, and I was grateful for that.
There's another paragraph in your story, and you say, "As the night fell and we walked back to the hostel, I thought about how happiness is a matter of perception. My Puerto Rican friend had lost a 22-year-old son fighting a war where he didn't belong, while my 21-year-old son was probably organizing parties in our house back at home. Linda was holding my hand while we walked back. My knee wasn't hurting anymore. A matter of perception indeed." How does the Camino resonate in you now?
Well, it's still, I still think about the Camino frequently. Mm-hmm. I really want to go back, and I spoke to my wife to do, you know, a longer section. Probably not the same one, but, you know, a shorter one, another section prior to see more towns and more, and to do it with friends. Because when you do it with friends, I mean, we were only four, it was actually five of us. It was the sister Juan Carlos was there, but she, I don't make a mention in the story. I didn't want to introduce another character. You discover a lot about your friends and about your relationship when you do the Camino. So, and then if we do it again, we're gonna be more aware of what we can find, what we can discover, or we can just reaffirm what we already know. And I think it would be an even greater experience doing it again.
Can you call up the feeling that you experienced on the Camino? You talked at the very start of the interview about your stressful job and how you go to work every day and you have to put up with all of these people putting pressure on you.
Yeah.
Can you call up, if you need to, the feeling of the Camino and the experience?
Absolutely. Some of the specific moments that we spent in sitting on a small restaurant on the top of a hill with a cold beer, looking down on a valley, or having a nice lunch at Puerto Marín, or, you know, so many things that, and then even the arrival at Santiago, the emotions that we felt arriving in Santiago. So the streets of Santiago itself, some of these things come back to me, and they certainly make my day and make me want to go back. And I know, even though if I might not do it next year or the year after, I'm going to go back there somewhere. And just that thought, yeah, it's very, very reassuring.
What would you say to someone thinking of walking the Camino?
Just do it. Don't, because I met a lot of people here. Every time I tell someone, I didn't know it was so popular here in Australia, but every time I speak to someone, they always say, it's on my bucket list, on my to-do list. I say, well, just do it now.
Yeah.
I tell them, just do it now. I mean, don't waste any more time. If you want, I can sit down with you, tell you about experience, recommend things to do, but do it now. I've never spoken to anyone in here that has done the Camino and, you know, not enjoyed it. That's bottom line. I mean, everyone I've met says to me, yeah, I've been to the Camino 2 years ago. I'm planning on going back. So every single person I've ever met. And then listening to your podcast and the experiences of people who've been there and done the full version. I mean, I know that's the feeling. I haven't found anyone saying, I just didn't enjoy it. So everyone that I know has enjoyed it thoroughly.
What did you love most about being a pilgrim?
Difficult to. The being a pilgrim, not about the Camino itself.
Yeah.
Don't know, because I felt this feeling of satisfaction of achievement, and I think I put it in a story at some point that it's a feeling of achievement, like I've achieved something, which now is diminished because I know that I did just the short lazy person's version, which is the Sarria to Santiago, yeah. But it's a feeling of achievement. I mean, that I hardly ever experienced. I think I said once that it compares to the time when I played baseball all my life. The first time I hit a home run, I think it was like 15 years old. The feeling of achievement was amazing. So it probably compared to that. And when my kids were born, you know, I felt like I've achieved something. So, which is greater than when I graduated from university. I mean, I felt back then that I had achieved something, but this is bigger than that.
Wow, that's what you loved most about being a pilgrim. What did you perhaps love not so much? What did you find difficult?
Well, just the physical, my health issues. This ankle that was killing me, and I arrived even when I arrived back. I was limping for a while. It's now a lot better, but it's not gone away. But I felt because when the pain came and I had to sit, I felt like disabled. I felt this is horrible. I mean, I cannot move. I cannot continue on. And my friends were always saying, "Oh, we'll stay." We just said, "No, just move forward. I'll catch up with you at some point. So it was that was the part I enjoyed the least. And I think that was it. I mean, everything else was positive. I mean, even then, I read about the Russian roulette of hostels. I think just one place that we stayed we didn't like much. But in the end, it was secondary. I mean, it wasn't that important at all, or the heat, or you know the none of that was the problem. My only problem was the ankle.
You didn't want to be a burden to your friends and to your wife.
No, not at all. I just wanted them to continue. I didn't want people to feel pity for me.
Sure, but having said that, did you fear at any stage that you wouldn't be able to actually finish?
Well, the first time it hit me, I said, well, it's not good. Let's see what happens. But then I realized, well, if I wait long enough, I swallowed pills that you have no idea. But I don't know if the pills had an effect, but just the fact that I rested for a while and then it became, it was okay. So I realized, well, that happens. And I woke up. And then one of the stages was like 32Ks. And that day it didn't hurt at all. I managed to do the 32Ks. With no pain, so which was like a win. So, but yes, I thought the first time it hit me, I said, "Well, if this doesn't get better, I'm not going to be able to walk." I was really scared about that, but anyway, pulled through.
Fantastic! If I was able to pick you up and place you on one spot back on your Camino, where would it be?
I think it would be you mean in a physical spot?
Yeah. Where?
I think Puerto Marín was a first stage. We got to that beautiful town on the top of a hill. Yeah. It was a beautiful day, great views. Yeah. We went to the hotel, which is I described the place with a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Which was the Padrino, based on the Padrino, the Godfather movies.
Yeah.
With a Marlon Brando statue and everything, so it was weird, but it was really, really well maintained. It treated us very well. So we took a shower, went out, and then had a nice, you know, pilgrim dinner, one of those cafes, you know, overlooking the valley, and it was beautiful. I felt it was my first leg. We made it, even with my ankle. Everyone was happy. Everyone was laughing. We were. All the pilgrims next to us eating. It was a really enjoyable night. And I said, at that point, I said, this is fantastic.
Yeah, Puerto Marín is just a beautiful place.
Ah,
it's so great.
Beautiful place.
So great. Yeah. What's one word that sums up the Camino for you?
fulfillment.
Okay, that's a good word. Yeah.
Achievement, yeah.
Fulfillment's a good word because... that means, in a sense, that you felt you needed something and you found it, you achieved it.
Yeah.
What do you hope to do with your short story?
I wrote it as soon as I got back. That was October last year, and then I took it to my workshop, my group of writers, and then. We workshopped the hell out of it, and there was a lot of recommendations. And you know, the first paragraph you read just now, the one about I thought about the Camino, the ups and downs, and all that.
Yes, yes.
My English tutor, my writer, asked me to delete it from the story because she said you don't need to reflect the reader should be able to do that. But then I was having an argument with her about leaving it on or taking it out. And then it took me until January to decide, no, I'm going to keep it. And I sent the story to the New Yorker, New Yorker magazine for publication. Whether they're going to publish it or not, I don't know. They're probably going to come back to me. They said to me in 3 months, in 90 days, we'll let you know whether it's going to be up for publication or not. So I'm waiting for them. And if I don't succeed with the New Yorker, I'm going to send it to another magazine called the Paris Review. It's also in New York. They publish these sort of stories. And that's what I'm planning on doing. And I'm putting together a compilation of short stories And I might publish it someday. Not sure when or how. But at the moment, I'm just sending it to the individual publications, and probably I'll send it to a company. I'm gonna wait until I hear back from the New Yorker, and if it doesn't go through, I'll just send it to the Paris Review. And if it doesn't, it's not published, I'll put it up for writing competitions.
Well, perhaps there's a place in the market for a book of short stories about the Camino.
Perhaps there is.
Maybe I should. Maybe I should put it together.
Oh yeah, maybe you can collect stories about the Camino, and we can put it together. Yeah, you can count on my story for that.
It's food for thought. You know.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because I wanted to say thank you for taking the time to write to me, Leo, and thank you for writing your story. Your thoughts on a page, I'm sure, will ring true with many pilgrims around the world when we finally find it a home.
Yes, and so far it's been very successful amongst my group of writers and friends, and I consider my most successful short story so far amongst, you know, my writing group. They were really interested. They really kept going on about it, and even after I presented that in my workshop, they kept emailing me with suggestions and comments and asking me questions. It was really fulfilling as well to see that they took to the story, and I hope that I'm gonna publish it at some point. Yeah,
the Camino provides, eh?
it does.
Hey, Leo, keep writing. Keep walking, keep sharing and caring, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and my listeners today.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's been a great chat. I've really enjoyed it. I just looked at the clock and realized, hang on, we've been talking for 42 minutes. I only thought we'd only just started.
It was a pleasure, Dan, and to be honest, your broadcast voice is very different to your singing voice. I don't know if someone told you that.
Well, I'm making it all up as I go along. How about that? Buen Camino, Leo.
Okay, buen Camino, Dan.
My guest this week, Leo Jan, the Australian pilgrim, originally from Venezuela. My quote this week is attributed to Craig Crippen, and I couldn't find much about him, to be honest, but I like what he's saying and where he's coming from. You are being presented with a choice, evolve or remain. If you choose to remain unchanged, you'll be presented with the same challenges, the same routine, the same storms, the same situations, until you learn from them, until you love yourself enough to say no more, until you choose change. If you choose to evolve, you'll connect with the strength within you. You'll explore what lies outside the comfort zone. You'll awaken to love. You will become. You will be. You will have everything you need. Choose to evolve. Choose love. Walk on, pilgrims. Oh, and don't forget, I'll be in the US in March to do some shows. San Diego, San Jose, Seattle, Chicago. If you're interested in attending any of those shows, shoot me an email, danmullinsmusic@gmail.com, and I'll send you the details, danmullinsmusic@gmail.com. Before we finish, another song from my album, Duende. I walked into Puente La Reina in 2017. I met a young Spanish pilgrim who told me she was a witch. She had me completely and utterly transfixed as she told me the story of the little bird who tends to the picture of the Virgin Mary in the town. And I fell under the spell of a flame-haired Spanish witch. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Buen Camino.
P980 walking, head down in a talking, cross paths with a wine glass wearing silk, Tinto di Verona in the morning, need a drink, narrow Dutch cigars, blue smoke in the mist, hovering smoke ring like a sling. Red hair and brown eyes, barbed wire makes me sing. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. Got a bite, I just got to itch. Oh, oh. telegraphle, smoke signals in the sky, touch of snow, a chance or two to smile, feed in the river in a judge-only trial, shadows in the vineyard, pears on the path, crunching of the road beneath my feet, red hair and brown eyes and copper nails make me sing. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. Got a sting, I just got to itch. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. I'm under the spell of a flame-haired Spanish witch. She moved around me, she moved slow and slowly, like a holy card against my heart. Broken man being led astray, that was just the start. Blessings in a vineyard, tears on the path, crunching of the road beneath my feet. Red hair and brown eyes and barbed wire makes me sing. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. Gotta burn, I just got to itch. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. I'm under the spell of a flame-haired Spanish witch. Oh, a sting, I just got to itch. Oh, 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 tell me it ain't so. I'm under the spell of a flame-haired Spanish witch. Pale yellow moon dips, my halo slips. I just got to itch under the spell of a flame-haired Spanish witch.